Welcome to Pep and Ched with Megan Nausch, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. Hey there, friends. My name is Megan, and this is the podcast where I call up friends and we talk about touring, snacks, and anything, everything in between. Today's guest is Kaya Cater. She is actually my label mate. We have both released records on Acronym Records, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation. We laughed. We cheered. Just a heads up, I talk a little bit about my eating disorder throughout this, so just wanted to give you a warning about that. We talk about the Junos. We talk about cheese. This is a lot of fun. Let's get right to it. Today's guest is Kaya Cater. Okay, Kaya Cater, I am so excited to talk to you today. Believe it or not, this is a music podcast, a music-themed podcast, whatever you want to call it, and you are actually the first artist from Toronto to be on the podcast.
Oh, Megan, it's a joy and an honor.
And, you know, I just feel like, you know, the reason why I...
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. My doorbell is going. Sorry, one second.
No worries. No worries. You know, I thought that was just you had sound effects on your end and you were just like putting an emphasis on how excited you were to be on the podcast.
I wish I had like a collection of little sounds that could express my feelings for the podcast.
So, you know, we're going to leave that in there because that's just, you know, it was a very enthusiastic doorbell. And I like to think that that is, a series of sound effects.
Right. Of course.
I'm so curious. What the touring experience is like for somebody who's based out of central Canada. Toronto, what feels like the hub, you know, I guess between Vancouver and Toronto, but really Toronto, like the hub of the music industry. Do you feel, I guess like when we're from out west here, like in Saskatchewan, I feel like before the pandemic, it was really important to get to Toronto, like at least twice a year. That's what it felt like. So I'm curious, like how often you feel like the need to play your hometown and like how often do you feel like you need to like get out of Toronto, and tour, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It totally does. So my career was a little bit, started off in a different place because I went to college in the States in, West Virginia. And so I was playing a lot in the States and sort of for my record Nine Pin, which came out in 2016, it really took off in the States before it did in Canada. And I think part of that reason might be because I'm a banjo player, and a songwriter, but I think a lot of my music is like draws from like old blues and Americana and folk. And I think so much of that is like very much linked to the US. I really wanted to play in Canada more than I actually got the opportunity to play. But in the last few years, it's been really awesome because I've just been put on a few shows, in Toronto, and it's starting to feel a little bit more like home. Like, but for my record release for my album Grenades in 2018, like my roommates came and like my friends came and it just felt like I had a home base, which was really nice. To be honest with you, like I've never done the Canadian rip. I've never driven, I guess colloquially, like the Canadian rip is doing like a tour from like possibly the East Coast, like all the way to BC, or at least yeah, like into Alberta. And I never did that. I would usually just wait for these one-off gigs that paid enough for me to fly out solo.
Yeah.
And then I'd do these solo shows and then fly back. So yeah, that's been my sort of kind of odd touring history.
I think something that's interesting about being out of Toronto too is that, and please correct me if I'm wrong and if this isn't your experience, but when we're flying anywhere out of like, you know, when I'm flying overseas, you know, it's like Regina to Toronto and then overseas. Like, I just wonder if, you know, because you're based out of Toronto, get maybe have access to more direct flights. And I just always thought that was like a cool thing about being Toronto based that at times, I'm not gonna lie, I've been a little bit like, is envious the right word? I don't know. And actually I've had friends make fun of my flight schedule before, and say, did you really need that 3-hour layover in Winnipeg? I'm like, I book the cheapest flights, 'cause we always have to pay for those extra connecting flights too, you know? Plus
Right.
I used to get like the same thing from the food court in Winnipeg Airport. Like, I kind of had a routine there, you know, maybe buy a new book. I don't know. I don't mind layover. I've got nothing but sweet time. I have been noticing that you're going to, or I noticed that you're going to Europe this fall, hopefully, with everything, right? The tour got rescheduled to this fall, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
And how many, like, what's that experience been like, with like the, like during the pandemic, having to like cancel, or not cancel, but postpone the dates. Like, this is such a, no one likes this word anymore, but like unprecedented times. Like, what is that? I actually haven't honestly talked to anybody who has had to make those decisions and make those calls. And like, also, I feel like this, you know, when I saw that poster, I was like, I felt so hopeful and full of optimism, and I really hope that the fall, it does feel safe. What's that experience been like?
Well, first of all, I feel you on the hopefulness part. So originally this European tour was supposed to happen. Oh my gosh. It was supposed to happen last fall. And my well, when the COVID lockdown started, I distinctly ha remember having a conversation with my manager, where she said, yeah, it'll be 6 weeks of lockdown. And I was like, okay, well, and so we canceled a few gigs, or they canceled on us, and that was fine. But you know, I was still sort of promoting this October 2020 tour. And it took me a while to, I think, come to terms with the fact that it wasn't going to happen, which, you know, globally is such, it's such a, like, I think I have a lot more understanding now that a lot of these things really don't matter. And that live music in the context of things is like, it's like a privilege, you know, it's like you want to go and see some music, and like you can enjoy that when everyone is inoculated. But we pushed that tour back 3 times, and I think I started to get really cynical by the third time. And so I really see these dates as sort of like, I don't know, just existing always like 20 paces in front of me. So I have felt like I'm always about to go on a tour in 6 months. But that tour feels more increasingly sort of fantastical. And many dates dropped off that calendar because we were rescheduling with, I think it was like 13, 14 venues. And some of them, like there was one in France who just said, like, we're just not gonna do this, you know. And so the tour has shrunk quite a bit, which, you know, I'm honestly okay with, because, you know, it's not the same world that's coming back, and touring is gonna look different. And I think I would rather at this point a small bite-sized chunk of like what is that going to feel like?
I think that makes a lot. Oh, sorry. I think that makes a lot of sense. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's just totally that feeling of like all of these dates have an asterisk on them, and just
Right.
gonna like if some come through, great. And I don't know, I'm just gonna sort of roll with it because I think what was more exhausting was saying, okay, this time this is for sure happening. That was way more exhausting than just
Right.
saying like, hey, it may or may not happen.
Yeah. I'm so curious your thoughts on this. You hinted that, you think the touring world is going to be different on the other side, and I'm curious in which ways do you think things are going to be different?
You're just like pulling these questions right out of my head, Megan. I've been thinking about this a lot.
Me too, me too.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we will be more real with each other as musicians, about like where our mental health is at. Whether we need an extra day off. Like I was thinking about.
Yes. Now I need sound
Yeah.
effects over here. I need like an alarm
Here,
going off when you say
here,
that.
here. I think I realized that I was just on this kind of hamster wheel of putting a record out, touring, coming back home, trying to get my life together, writing, putting another record, and like that was just like how it's done was the reason that was given to me. And I think a lot of tours that were organized by my agents, whom I have great respect for, but so much of it was like, okay, how can we maximize this artist's time on the road, in terms of the influx of money so that she can then pay her band and like have enough money for flights and like we can make the 15% and everyone comes out, with a little bit of change in their pocket. And I do respect that. But often I think I was saying like on a very quiet level, like at a mouse level that I was having a difficult time and that there wasn't enough time off. But nobody was, I felt like I wasn't really being listened to, or I would be met with this thing of like, okay, well, you can have another day off. But if you plan to pay your band on days off, which I do, you're sort of losing money. So it was always this like conversation between my own sanity and like the apparent legitimacy of like capitalism. And I always felt like, oh, well, I can't turn down this gig, or I have to do this. There's always this like compulsion of like, well, I really should do this. And a lot of it, I think, was just me being socialized, just as like a people pleaser and not wanting to let my team down and all of these things. And what I really came to terms with, there's this great Instagram account called the Nap Ministry. And basically,
Yes.
and the Nap Ministry, like they just minister about divesting from capitalism and just resting, and how you don't have to always be planning something or like on the road or moving. And like that's, I don't know if your band and yourself experienced this as well, but like we were just exhausted. We're exhausted and like run and just like functioning on fumes. And that's something that I don't want to go back to. And I've thought about it, and like maybe paying the price for that is like having 2 days off instead of one per week and just paying my band and like making less money.
Yeah.
And like maybe that's just the thing is like I make less money, but I feel better.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think a lot of feelings about capitalism and where I function in that and how I can be a better like employer to my band, and you know, just like, yeah, just trying to function more as a human being and less as a product and a brand. Which we're all taught to do at these conferences and through our publicist, and you know, so
I totally, I'm so on the same page as you. I really appreciate your insight to this, because I feel like this is, I've had a few conversations with folks that were mentioning that, that their current schedule was not sustainable. And I think about like the pressure I was putting on myself, in January, 2020 with starting to work on the new record and all the pressure I was feeling and how, it just wasn't sustainable. And I was sick, essentially. Like I was really sick, and I just wasn't aware of that. So I had to, I had to go to my doctor. I had to get on medication finally for the first time as an adult. I'm finally on medication for my mental health, and that has really helped me throughout this pandemic too. But like the pressure I had on myself, and then, okay. So I guess just to give the you know, the listener a bit of backstory too, it's like I felt this immense pressure about the second record, because the last album I released was, and yours was as well, Juno nominated, right? So you put this pressure on yourself, like, I hope the next record delivers, because maybe folks are paying attention now, and if I don't deliver now, maybe they won't, maybe it'll be hard to get that attention back. And I felt this, I really put this pressure on myself. And so when we were going in to start recording the second album in January of 2020, I had all these pressures just circling, and it was, yeah, it was just too much. It was just too much. And then all of a sudden, it didn't even matter. Like, you know, it's like we couldn't even work on it for a bit there. And I thought, okay, what? And then all these tours, all these plans, all these festival dates were just gone. And it was, you know, obviously it was like the reason why this pause happened in my career is terrible. And I don't want to call it a silver lining or anything, because there's so much human suffering that's going on right now because of this global pandemic. But it was a pause that I needed. I just hate how it was offered, you know, like I just hate that it took a global pandemic for me to realize, oh yeah, that was not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. What was the turning point for you in that process? I'm really curious, because you were sort of ramping up for like a big in quotation marks year of like touring and release, yeah, and all of that.
Yeah.
So coming to terms with that, like what was the turning point? I mean, if there even was one, or maybe it's like a daily thing, or.
Well, you know. No, I think there was, and I appreciate that question. I feel like I definitely had a bit of like, I don't know if existential crisis is the right word, but it probably actually is when I think about it, because like last April, you know, when it started to kind of like sink in, like how long this might be, and like last May and June, I think by June I was like really self-reflecting and looking at, I'm also 31 now. So I'm on the other side of that Saturn return. if anyone's into astrology, and I really, this pause has really caused me to like look at what I want out of life and not just out of my career. And for the longest time, last 13 years of my life, I have just been eating, sleeping and breathing being a songwriter and identifying as being a songwriter. Like that's a part of my person, you know. My name's Megan, my son's in Scorpio, I'm a songwriter. You know, like that's, yeah, you know, like that's the, and then when I was no longer, when my career couldn't be happening in the same way that I wanted it, and that I, and actually when I couldn't be making money from it too, you know, I had a bit of like a, yeah, of a crisis. 'Cause like, I'm so wrapped up, my identity, my sense of self, my sense of purpose is so wrapped up in singing songs for people. and that's not the only thing I want out of life. Like, I don't, you know, and it, so I realized, and I'm still working through this, as you can probably tell with my rambling answer, but I realized that I need to also honor and nurture other parts of myself. And if my career can't keep moving forward in the way I thought it was going to, like, that is like this, you know, this radical acceptance of the situation. I talk about radical acceptance a lot with regards to like going through a divorce and having a short marriage. Like, at some point you just have to realize, like, this is happening and I cannot control this. Like, I cannot control this. And I think that having to accept the things you can't control has been a huge part of this process for me. Like, I had, you know, somebody who lives with I really feel like I'm in a good place now. Like, I do feel like I have healed for the most part of my eating disorder, but I got a really strong urge last spring when the pandemic first hit to diet. And that was really, that was really hard. And it kind of struck me out of nowhere. Like, this, like, I opened the fridge one day and I was like, this thought was so big. It was so intrusive and it was so real to me that it was like, you should diet. And I was like, whoa. And probably that might be the right definition of triggering. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what triggering actually means. And I realized that's me wanting to have control of something. And that's like what stems from my eating, like that's what the root of my eating disorder is. And my heart goes out to all the folks that are struggling with disordered eating right now because of the pandemic. Like, the numbers have gone up and the resources aren't always accessible for folks. And so if anybody's listening that's struggling right now, it's just like, it will get better. Like, your relationship with food can get better. Trust me. I hit rock bottom in my teens and I've had such a good life since then, you know, and it can't get better. So that's another, you know, a byproduct of this pandemic is unfortunately is that. So, and then when you're thinking about these big concepts and when there's so much like conversation around, you know, life and death and sickness and health, it makes me thinking that people aren't going to pay attention to my follow-up record not feel so important to me, because it's, you know, my art's still important to me, but it's not life or death. And it's also like, you know, do I want to do other things with my life? Like, do I want to have a family? Like, do I want to have kids? You know, like, I really feel like if this time for a lot of folks has caused people to reflect and look at like, what do I actually want out of life? You know?
Yes. And seriously, I think tracking our egos a bit.
Totally. Oh my gosh. You know, totally.
Like, wow, this moment is not about Kaya Cater, the brand, the show, Megan Nash, the brand, the show. It's about, like, you know, so it's not that. And yeah, I think, yeah, just having us like sit with ourselves for a second.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. I went to take a sip of my coffee, and then when you mentioned ego, I the coffee went back into my cup. I was like, oh, I spit out my coffee over here, because like, you're so right. And like, you know, we're told so often to think about ourselves as a brand and our music as a brand and marketing, and we have to do that, and we have to market ourselves, which is really difficult when we're like multifaceted humans, you know, and we're told to put this one part of ourselves forward and focus on that so people can understand what they are getting, you know. It's so dehumanizing and weird, and I've really, yeah, I just had to sit with myself. I had to sit with myself and not just like, if I was experiencing, like for me performing, that's it for me. Like, I love being up on stage for 45 minutes. I get to be myself. I get to be like, I feel like untouchable for a bit. You know, it's like, if I'm having a bad day, if someone's being mean to me, or if I'm being, you know, mean to them, I guess, or like upset with somebody, I guess is how I should word that, for 45 minutes, that won't be the focus. That won't be my problem. Like, I just go up there and I entertain and I get to live my truth. That's what it feels like. And when that's gone, taken away, and you just have to sit with yourself. Oh gosh. Like, yeah, it's, and actually, like, I joke about it with my partner though sometimes too. And like I mentioned on the podcast earlier that sometimes he'll just be like, yay, Megan, and start like clapping, you know, for me.
Yay! Oh. We need an applause sound effect.
Yeah, we do. I need that to be like my morning alarm. My ringtone is just the sound of an applause.
You did it. You woke up. Good work.
Yay.
Yeah.
We need to take a little break, so maybe this is the way we'll go out on. We'll just have a little applause. Or do you want to, should we just do that? Should we just cheer? Let's just cheer for each other. Yay, Kaya! Right.
Yay!
Yay!
Megan!
Hi there, you are listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. Today's guest is Kaya Cater. All right, Kaya Cater, we're both good friends with Dana Beeler from Hello Delaware, who has also been a podcast guest.
Beeler is a 100% superb human being.
That's on the record now, folks. You heard it here. And I totally agree. And she feels very similar towards you. Here are some things that she has said about you, Kaya. She said that you are a very kind person and an excellent listener, and that you are very funny, and that you are just like, you're a solid person, and that you put her at ease. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to say about somebody, that like they put someone at ease. Like, that is just, yeah, that's very cool. And so it's mutual.
Oh, that's so nice of Beeler to say. And yeah, you got me all verklempt over here in my house. I'm a little emotional. Thanks for including that.
Well, it's just the truth. It's just the truth. This podcast is a part of what I do like to do with this podcast is just, you know, maybe give the listener an idea of like how close knit the music community actually is in Canada. And it's just like, this podcast is a celebration of friendship. Like, I feel like sometimes in our culture, we don't celebrate friends and friendship as much as we should. We focus so much on romantic partners. And it's like, you know, friends, friendships are like, they are just like, they're a big part of the fabric of like when I think about like what makes my life good and full. And it's like, a big part of that is my friends, you know? So yay, friendship.
Yay, friendship. Yes. And I can't wait to see Beeler, and I can't wait to see you. And yeah, I can't wait for like be in community again.
I know.
I'm very excited for that.
Oh, I feel that. Like, you know, when I think about, I don't exactly remember how we met, but it might have been at Folk Alliance. I think it was Folk Alliance when it was at Kansas City, in Kansas mm-hmm. City. And like, when I think about that Folk Alliance has come up in the podcast before, because when you think about situations that we absolutely cannot be in right now, are those private showcases that happen in hotel rooms, you know, like, and I miss music like that so much, like being in like cramped little spaces with other people enjoying live music and having that like collective experience, sharing that with strangers. I miss that so much, but I'm pretty sure we met at Folk Alliance.
That would actually make a lot of sense. And I think I seem to remember that I met, maybe I'm totally fabricating this, but I seem to remember that it was Beeler who introduced me to you.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it 100% was, because I was, I stayed with Beeler, I'm pretty sure, at Folk Alliance that year. And then I think probably the last time I saw you was the Junos in 2019. We were both nominated and we sat at the same table and we played, our showcases were at the same venue. And that was probably the last time that I saw you. I remember laughing a lot with you and your band in the back, in the back room, like in the green room. I do. I remember that.
Yeah. That was a really interesting gig too, because the stage was tiny, and I loved your show. Because that was the first time I'd seen you play, and I loved your show so much, and I just thought you were so goofy, and I really loved that.
Well,
very silly weekend.
I loved your set too, and I also I love your record. I think it's just so beautiful, and I have it on both vinyl and compact disc over here, and I've streamed it, so I am a fan, and I really do think that it's a beautiful, gorgeous album, and yeah,
thank you.
It's an honor that to be nominated in the same category as you, to be, yeah, included.
Likewise, yeah.
So that Juno's experience, this isn't the best question, but what was that like for you?
Oh man, I think it was such a total, I think my brain was like, you know, when, I don't know, like when the entire orchestra is playing at once, but they're like slightly off time or something. So It's just like a big sound, but it's like a little chaotic. And I just felt so excited to be there, and that energy was there. And then I think I felt very lost. So just like people telling me what to do, where to stand, go to this meeting next, talk to this person now. And I think just trying to gain balance in all that. And I think also, the Junos, man. I'm curious what your experience was as well. You know, I loved some elements of it, and some other elements I just felt, I think, I'll be more specific. I'll say the elements of it that I loved were when I saw artists being very honest and very real. Like there was a moment when Jeremy Dutcher stood up for his acceptance speech, and he just talked about, you know, the fact that like indigeneity is not a monolith.
Mm.
And he asked all of his co-nominees to stand up and just like highlighted each of them in their work.
Yeah.
I thought that was such an honest moment, because I think the Junos does have a lot of, like, it has a very commercial sheen. And I think there was pressure for me, I think, to just be grateful in every circumstance. Like every interview is like, oh, are you so happy and grateful to be here? And in a sense, and of course I was, but I think I was also like, hey, there's some things that feel strange here. You know, like I was supposed to present an award, and I had a lot of anxiety because I have like curly kinky hair, and I was supposed to get my hair done. And they were like, oh, you're going to present an award. And I was like, okay, great. And they were like, and you're going to get your makeup and hair done. And I was like, okay, is there someone who knows how to do like black hair?
Mm.
And they're like, well, we're going to check. We're going to get back to you and stuff. And I don't know. Like, I don't want to put anybody on blast. It's not at all like that. But I think, yeah, there was just a lot of feeling like, okay, what am I supposed to do here? You know, And I think like actually hanging out with you was a really grounding experience for me, because I felt like you were like swimming in that strange water with me. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of like, okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I just felt like you were the only other artist that I was really near for that whole thing. And I know that there were so many artists there, but I just didn't get to connect with many people. I think you were like the person, you were like a co-nominee, and you know, you, I think you were talking a lot about how you were feeling too. And it, I remember we had this conversation on the way back from the awards, and I don't know, I just, so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that you were a really grounding presence there in that entire, just like, it really felt like a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I appreciate that. And it, and the feeling is totally mutual. And I'm really glad that we have the chance to, you know, 2 years later, talk about this, because maybe I should have reached out the time and told you that afterwards, because I was really, I was, how did you word it? Swimming in those waters, or, I was in the, I was feeling, it was a bittersweet experience for me because of some of the things that were going on in my personal life during that time that I still wasn't telling anybody. So it was just like, I feel like sometimes in those situations I'm just like grasping for like what I feel is like realness. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just like, yeah, like other folks that I'm like, okay, I think you're kind of like on the same wavelength as I am in this situation. That's why like I do really love there's lots of conferences that I actually do love, and a lot of that comes from because I get to meet other artists, you know, and that's like, yeah, this is such a relationship-based industry too that I don't even think it's necessarily like a negative thing, but I'm not like a big networking person. I'm just like, I hope I can make some friends. Like, that's where I go into these situations with. Actually, I thought about this for the next time I go to a networking event. I want to go to a pet store. I'm going to go to the fish section, and I want to get like a little tiny net that you use to scoop out goldfish, and then okay. I'll have it in like, maybe I'll have to carry a purse. I don't normally carry a purse, or I'll have it like up my sleeve or something at a networking event, and then, you know, to break the ice, I'll like bring it out and I'll go, is this networking?
Oh my god, wow,
Kaya, you were way too,
that's
good to
incredible.
Me
incredible. Oh, that's really good.
You're way too good to me. I even thought too that maybe I could present it with like, I don't even know how many folks get business cards made, but like, because then it would be like holding the net would be holding something too. Is this networking? But anyways, thank you.
So good.
You were way too kind, but I do appreciate your perspective and like your experience too at the Junos, and I'm just curious your thoughts on how to make touring be like a safer and maybe like a healthier experience when we're allowed to do it again.
Yeah, well, and it's so interesting because like it is our workplace, you know, like it's our place of work, and sometimes it's like, you know, you're doing a show like at a restaurant, or like I've done shows at breweries or whatever, you know, you do shows where other people are off work, you know, where yeah. like people are relaxing, and so it's this dichotomy where like you're certainly 100% at work and the audience is 100% there to relax, and so I think it just makes the idea of a workplace feel really blurry. And you know, I think with my band has like changed a little bit over the time that I've been performing, but the people who I've gravitated to having in my band, it's no longer the people who are like, you know, the shreddies, and it's more people who have like an understanding of their own emotional landscape, and therefore can be more empathetic to where I'm coming from. And I think I learned that the hard way, like you're saying, you sort of learn it the hard way by touring maybe with people who who you vibe with musically, but like on an interpersonal level, they're just on a different plane.
Yeah.
And so I went through times where I did feel really unsupported, and I think at that point I didn't know how to vocalize. I was a really young performer, and I didn't know how to vocalize the things that made me uncomfortable. So like I get a lot of like microaggressions, a lot of like being hit on by older men, but in a strange way where I couldn't quite tell what was happening. I remember I did a show on Prince Edward Island once, and I was about to go on stage. I was still in college at this point, and I was about to go on stage, and I saw that the venue, which was a community center, had just had put on a play with white people in blackface. And whoa. I was staring at this poster right before I went on stage. And, you know, I couldn't quite put that into where I was really young, and I couldn't quite put into words what that made me feel like, but it just, there are so many complicated emotions. I think being in a lot of white spaces, which a ton of people of color who are artists, that's who we often play for, because I think white folks are often just like white people in Canada and the US hold a lot of wealth. Mm. You know, they hoard a lot of wealth, and so I think like in the art sector, a lot of it gets spent by white folks. I mean, it's such a can of worms, right? But I think I've gotten to a place now where I don't want sympathy for my bandmates. Like I want comrades. I want people, you know, I have debated, and I didn't do this before, but so many incidents have happened now that I feel like you're talking about just giving people the talk, you know, and I almost feel like when I'm hiring someone new on, just saying like, hey, listen, all of these things usually are going to happen. And so like, if you see something happen that doesn't feel right, you know, you just go talk to the, you know, manager or the person, you know, like I take that labor off of me, you know, like you can check with me and say, hey, I noticed that this was kind of messed up and I want to go talk to someone about it. Is that cool? And I'll say, yeah, but it takes the onus off me, right, as like the racialized person to do that. And I think also like there's a lot of talk about hiring people of color, you know, in the music industry. And I think that I have to realize that, you know, I have responsibility as well when I'm bringing my friends and my musicians into spaces that are folk spaces, that are like white dominated spaces, that I make sure that there's an avenue for them to say like, hey, if anything happens, like you can come to me and I will deal with it. You know, like I will make sure that at least when you're like on my gig, that you're not experiencing things that don't go reported. You know, and I think that's the thing, is like I want, if you know, if I'm bringing Black folks onto my gig, I just want to make sure that, you know, hey, like do you feel like you need to be paid more to like be in this very white space, which is like extra stressful. And like maybe it's like, oh no, like, you know, this is my standard fee, whatever, I don't care. Like, but I think just being able to have those conversations, because I have always been a band leader, but I know many of my friends who have been hired for other people's gigs, and then just been in white dominated spaces in a white dominated band and not felt like they had an avenue to say, hey, I'm kind of stressed out right now. I don't want to like talk to the family of this house concert, but like just express support for Blue Lives Matter or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, is like, I think, yeah, like the workplace is always changing. And it's not safe. It's just not safe. And so it's like, okay, well, how can we make ourselves as a bubble safe for each other? And how can we like go to the mat for each other? Mm-hmm. You know? And it's not just like me, the performer, having to say, like, I got introduced once at a festival with, she's got a little black in her. This is Kaya Cater. So that was my introduction. And I like went in and played music to an audience.
Yeah.
And so much stuff, I think I've just stuffed down because you, like, you know, when you're in this situation, you just have to get it going. But I really encourage like side players, if that's what you want to say. I think side players are just as important, and not side players at all. But like, if you're in a band situation, and especially if you have privilege in a room, like I'm light skinned, right? So like white people are gonna be more precious with me than they would be with, you know, like my dark skinned family. And so it's like, how do you use that privilege and like leverage is not a good word, but I think just like be aware of it and make sure that you know you're looking around the room and saying like, who's not in here, which segues perfectly into a serious feeling that I have with festivals, which is you can't just hire two biracial artists and call your festival diverse. You know, right. you can't hire a majority of white artists and then like a few artists of color, because that isn't actually like anti-racism. You know, like you have to be able to just to be more, I think to be more active in the artists that you're booking. You know, like you can't just say like, okay, this is a palatable, you know, amount of blackness, you know? And I think I often am in that category because I'm light skinned. It's like, well, yeah, we like booked a black artist, but like, I don't represent black people. I represent my own perspective. And you know, like if I look at your festival and like the darkest person there is me, then like, what does that say about you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And you know, this is obviously, I mean, you were saying earlier, Megan, that like a lot of your education has come from black women and black femmes. Mm-hmm. And like, that's exactly where my education has come from on that as well. And so like, you know, I want to shout out people like Amber Abundance, who, you know, talks a lot about colorism and colorism healing, which is a great resource. And so, yeah, I called in a venue last week who, you know, it was all white people and then me, you know, and it's like, yeah, you have to see the biases in your programming.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Kaya, I so appreciate everything you've just shared with me and eventually the listenership of this podcast. Like, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your perspective. 'Cause I know I need to hear that. I know more folks need to hear that. And, I really, really appreciate that. And I feel like, you know, when you say like our space is our workplace is constantly changing and that it's not safe, like, and that we need to create do that work within our bubble in order to make folks feel, like have more positive experiences and feel safer. Like that's really powerful. I'm thinking about that in the context of my own band and also like the Saskatchewan music community at large and what work we need to do. Yeah, you just like really hit the nail on the head too with like house concerts as well. You know, for those maybe listening that aren't familiar, it's like, how often do we find ourselves as artists going into somebody's home that we don't know them? We don't know them. We go into their homes and we perform. And a lot of times too, those people might be putting you up for the night. And that is like, this isn't when I say it out loud right now, especially to someone who's not familiar with the house concert circuit, they might think, oh my gosh, you're doing that. Like, but it's like, no, that's like a normal thing that, that, has been quite financially, can be, lucrative for artists. And so it's, yeah, it's important that we know how to make those experiences safe because, wow, I just really, yeah, I just really appreciate you. I want you to know that.
I appreciate you too. And yeah, and I'm really glad that you're, you know, calling out the people that need to be called out and working for change. Cause I think like we do need to be upset because it's upsetting.
Yeah.
We do, yep. You know?
Yeah.
And we do need to demand change and demand change within ourselves and within our community.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Kaya, I have to ask you again, I just have to thank you so much for everything that you have, that you've shared. I think you have a really valuable perspective that I'm just glad that we have a platform. So, you know, so people like me, other white folks like me can hear this because we need to hear this. We need to wake up, we need change. And, I just really appreciate everything you've shared with us today. And I'm just so grateful that, because this podcast does get funding, that you're being paid right now. Cause, that's really important. I have to ask you now what your favorite snack is. I'm so sorry. That feels like an insensitive segue. I just, I'm so sorry.
No, it's great. Okay. Favorite snack, road snack, you said?
Yeah. Like when you're touring, what are you reaching for?
Okay. So I am reaching for most often the Ritz cracker, the Ritz cheese crackers.
Nice.
Like the ones with the actual like cheese filling in them.
Nice.
The sandwiches. I love those. Like, I think when I don't know what it is, but they're so, so good. And they just happen to be something that I don't eat at home, but that I absolutely do eat on the road. And I love it. I love a good cheese plate. It's a slightly more frou-frou, like thing that doesn't happen often, but whenever a presenter is like, here, I made a cheese plate, it's just awesome, and I love that.
Yeah.
I sense a cheese theme with my snack.
Well, you know, yeah. What I love cheese so much, Kaya, I really do, and it's I look forward to the day that we can just like share some cheese plates
together. Oh, heck yes,
I look forward to that. Yeah. Day, my friend, thank you so much for the chat.
Thank you so much, Megan. You're wonderful.
You're wonderful. Kaya, thank you so much for the wonderful conversation. Dear listener, please check out her music at kayacater.com. You've been listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. The Creative City Center is supported by the Canada Council for the Arts, Sask Arts, the City of Regina, Canadian Heritage, and Creative Saskatchewan. This podcast is made possible because of the ongoing support of these agencies in spite of everything that's going on in this pandemic-fatigued world we live in. Special thank you to the Garys for the music. The Creative City Center is a community-based arts center that used to present around 200 events a year and gave a lot of emerging artists a home as they were starting out. Now they are home for a lot of online productions, so check out creativecitycenter.ca to see what else they are cooking up besides all of this Pep and Ched with me, Megan Nash. Support live music, folks, no matter what form it's served up in. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.